Du hörst einen Podcast von Rabe.
How is Alan Vega? Is he okay?
Yeah, he's okay. Last I heard.
Okay. So you don't see each other too often?
These days we do when we play, and we've been doing shows, and there's sometimes large spaces between shows.
Okay.
So we don't see each other usually at those times. We have our lives, and people ask me more recently. They say, "Oh, how does it feel? You know, when did it end, and how does it feel?" I said, "It never ended. You know, suicide never ended. It's just, it was always like that. It was just we did what came up that we wanted to do, and what seemed, and what we could do." Alan, you know, he doesn't like to travel as much as I do. At the same time, I don't blame him, you know, I understand it, with security, with the airlines. And,
sure.
But, you know, he has a different temperament when it comes to traveling.
Okay.
So, he's all right. I'm in touch with his wife, who's a keyboardist, too, and she's kind of a liaison and represents us in a lot of things.
So okay.
She brings me up to date on what's happening with him.
Well, you've been doing this for a very long time now. I mean, when you started, there was nothing like it. So how did you come up with this kind of sound? What was the inspiration? Was there like a definitive moment when this sound sort of was there?
Well, it was just a continuation of everything I had been developing as a musician, a very young musician. I mean, I was very serious about committing my life to music as a teenager, if not before. And I started, you know, preteen. So by the time I met Alan, I was still quite young, but I was very deep into what I had been doing, and we kind of focused ourselves into what became suicide, and it just developed from there. And I guess there was a definitive moment when I was looking for a way to carve out what I was doing that would incorporate what we were doing theatrically, and what Alan was doing. I was encouraging him to be a vocalist. And so I went in and I was looking for something, and I found immediately the way to do it as a solo, you know, as all the music. And I found Rocket USA and I found Ghost Rider. And I knew that was the way to approach it, where we were going. And that was kind of a definitive moment. And it went from there.
But what about the sound? It was very unique. There wasn't anything like it. Was it just what you could do with the technology that was available at the time, or was like a vision to try and create something like that?
Well, it came out of the electronics were just so new. It was a totally new frontier when I first heard it. A little before Suicide, I had been playing with a group of my own and another group that had me playing. I would be playing electric organs and things, because there weren't pianos in those places and things. And when I heard the potential for that sound, especially in large open arenas, and, you know, not stadiums, but I mean out in parks and things. And then when I started using some of the electronic little devices and boxes and kind of making a homemade synthesizer like that. It was all so fresh and new. I knew this was the place for me to go, to continue. Well, I knew that even before. I bought myself an electric piano in those days. And I knew that was the direction for me. I heard Tony Williams' Lifetime, the first record that they made.
Okay.
And I don't know if you're familiar with Tony Williams, but was Miles Davis's drummer
okay.
at 17 years old. he was like the drummer of the time, the next of the great in the lineage line of great drummers, and he was part of the last kind of great quintet of Miles Davis. And he came to New York. He was invited when he was 16, and he was already such a virtuoso, and at 17 he was playing with Miles Davis.
Wow.
And I got to know him in New York, and he befriended me, actually, almost took me under his wing. He was only a couple of years older than I was. We're talking now when he was maybe 21. It's a few years older than I. And so when his record came out, Emergency, it was called, a lot of musicians would know that. I said, well, let me hear what Tony was doing, because at this time he was going into a rock play, you know. And when I heard that, I heard certain things there, the potential for electronics coming out of John McLaughlin and guitars.
Yeah.
And the combination of the three of them. And I knew I had to get there was something in electronics just so fresh. It was visual.
Yeah.
And it led to eventually suicide.
But your background musically was originally in jazz.
Well, originally rock. I was brought up in rock. I mean, that was my generation's music. Rock and roll was everything we did.
Yeah.
And as a musician, I started out playing rock and roll, blues, boogie woogie, and then when I heard the potential, heard what was happening in jazz, I said, "Wow, I want to do this." Well, you know, jazz is something. If you want to do it, you study it for years.
Yeah, you have to be pretty committed.
Yeah. And so, as a teenager, for quite some time, I was deeply into jazz. And the only thing was, I was really too young for it, among other things. Because it was actually towards the later stages of its cycle. It's avant-garde, already had happened, when I was coming into it. It was going out, in a way. I was coming in.
Okay.
You know, it's just, it has to do with the time you're born. All these things. Rock was really still the only frontier that seemed to be open for anything.
Yeah.
In the early 70s. It hadn't
been explored yet.
Yeah, totally explored, right. So so the sound was, you know, once I started just going deeper into electronics, I heard the potential, and then I guess I brought everything of myself into that, and it became what it became eventually. I mean, it took time to. In the beginning, Suicide was almost like one long sound.
Yeah.
We had songs, maybe like three or four, and it would sound like a wall of sound from the beginning. That was our shows.
So, are the songs actually structured, or is it all a big jam?
Well, later on they got structured, you know, they got carved out.
Yeah.
It's not like we were, many groups usually write songs and then they go out and they do the songs. We kind of chiseled them out of stone in a way, like a sculptor. We went out and just played to the stars, so to speak. It was a total inspiration, and it was a total wall of, there's only way to describe it as a wall of sound.
Yeah.
There were certain lyrics and certain basic things that we structured them on. And we did a gig, it was just like one, you know, incredibly intense screams and sound like that.
Yeah.
And the songs got developed over quite a few years out of that block of stone. And then, you know, me getting a drum machine, I was hearing, you know, potential for doing that. And then we started to chisel out the songs. That's why, in a way, they were maybe, it was a little bit of a different approach, because we didn't come into it, you know, like, well, we're going to write a song in a certain form. Like, groups know how to write songs, and they write with a bridge, a refrain, a chorus.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing then, too. But we weren't into doing that at all, you know. We were into exaltation. You know, we were into pure
I know ecstasy. Your records at the time, yeah.
Yeah, and and eventually we honed it in a little bit. I mean, not for that reason. We just started finding songs.
Yeah.
Out of that sound.
Yeah. And were the early days really as wild as well? It must have been legendary. I keep reading about this Brussels concert in 1978 and the concerts at the time. Were they really as outrageous as they say?
More, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, records can only capture so much, right? Print.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a real people screaming and yelling and attacking and jumping on the stage and throwing things. I mean, it was punk. It was the heyday of the punk era. It was everything that the musicians really taught the audiences they were getting back. And Suicide was really an unknown entity at that point. I mean, and people who came, like for Elvis Costello, never heard of Suicide.
Yeah.
People who came from the Clash, a few may have, mostly didn't. Usually when you open up for a band anyway, you tend to get a lot of reaction. People come to see the band that they came to see, and they like to really torture, in a way, the opening band. It's very rare that sometimes an opening band, if they're really nice or something about them, they get embraced.
Yeah.
But usually people come and they just yell, give us the Clash, give us a... And Elvis Costello, in a way, it was interesting. He was, phenomenon in a sense. He was mainstream, whatever it was in that day, but he was punk mainstream. It was like he appealed to a wider audience, but it was still a punk audience. But the same way, in a way, Blondie did, even more so later. So, and they weren't expecting anything like us. The Clash's audience is as punk as they were.
Well, I guess the punk at the time was classically guitar music, and what you were doing was completely different.
Right. And so, you know, their reaction was the nature of the day. I mean, the style of the day. It was a time where you could still drink glasses and bottles in the audience. So.
Yeah.
And even the groups, I mean, the Clash got plenty of stuff thrown at them out of affection. You know, I used to go sometimes around the stage and watch, and you'd see the spit flying. And
yeah.
I mean, they say that's how Joe eventually got sick from that. Because,
yeah?
Yeah.
Picked up something
hepatitis.
From... Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah. Oh, but you see it in the air. Like, but that was out of affection. If they liked you, the audience would throw things too. That was the fashion of the day. But no, it was every night when we tour. And when you could go further and further up, like it's in the UK, you start and you go higher and higher up in the UK. It was crazier.
The further up north, yeah. I used to live in the north of England.
You did, huh?
Mm.
Right, so you know, yeah. And
yeah.
In the punk time, I mean, punk was more focused. I mean, it started in New York, but as a working class expression, as punk purely, it was American that way, but the English working class really were focused in terms of their expression of punk, as you know.
Yeah.
And when you got up to those northern, in the Midlands and the Highlands, you know, it was heavy stuff. With Elvis Costello, it was all the continent. We didn't go to England with him.
Yeah.
And we thought, finally, we're going to get appreciation. We start out in France at a science fiction festival in Metz. Intellectual festival, writers and artists and bands, and there was just a small little room we played in, and they started throwing things, and you know, and from there every night in Europe with Elvis Costello, it was like mayhem.
So wasn't it a bit worrying?
I guess it should have been. I was just enjoying. I mean, it was just incredible energy.
Yeah.
And.
So you could work with that energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, these stories, in a way, it reminds me of the Beat Generation, you know, so these people are very sort of intellectual and curious, looking for something at the same time as something quite destructive or self-destructive and quite fearless, sort of.
Well, it's like when you, it's love, you know, when you love and maybe obsession, which love is. Certain people approach their music or what they, you know, as it's a love, it's obsession. They really have no choice but to do what they do because they love it so much, and that's all they really feel they'll ever want to do. So they put their lives on the line, and especially early in their lives or careers when they don't know if they'll ever make it or not, you know, make a living or whatever. But they don't really don't. They're fearless because they have no choice, and they love it. So it's when you're like loving a woman or a man or a person.
Yeah,
you know, that's the way love is. It's only self-destructive in the sense that you're going against the status quo of the time, because usually you also have usually coming in with a vision of something new, and you're not going to be accepted usually right away. It's rare. So it's taking a big chance like that. In that sense, it's self-destructive vis-a-vis the risk.
Yeah. Well, I guess, and when you're younger, you're immortal still.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
But since the early ages, has your approach to music changed, or do you still approach music in that way?
Yeah, I think I do. Sure. I mean, I develop from where I left off, and from where I go, and where I've been is related to what I need. You know, what I need to entertain me, so to speak, if I want to use that phrase. It has to move. I have to be moved by what
I'm
doing.
Sure. I mean, if it doesn't touch you, you can't reach the audience, can you?
Right. And I can only be moved by what's individually me, and what, based on my sense of taste and development in music. So, you know, and the more you've developed and you've worked and studied and learned, which is a continual process, never ends. The higher, not, you know, the strict, the more focused your standards are too. It's not going to be as easy to move yourself, because you've already heard so much, and you've already developed thought and worked so much towards something in music. And so, you know, that's what it's about. So when you find, it's a search, it's an adventure to still find places that move you with that same feeling of exaltation, in a sense, the same feeling of wow. Like when you first heard, when any time you heard a great piece of rock and roll or any, you know, piece of music, and you said, wow, that's, you know, or saw
just
a girl and
you
said, wow, you know, or something, wow, you know,
yeah.
Heard a, you know, read a book and said, wow, it's to be in awe, you know. So I guess that's what certain artists look for continually, is to find that fresh, that new, that frontier, to go, wow,
okay,
look what I found.
Yeah, well, I find your work is incredibly eclectic. There's so many different influences and so many different types of records you've made. Is there a common theme that goes through these, or is every just an individual piece of work?
Well, I don't. I mean, that's up to probably the listener to say. Like when I read sometimes reviews, which I try not to. many times, the journalist will say it still sounds like him. It's different. It's, you know, it's another like whole new place, but you still know it's him. And sometimes critics say, oh, you know, it's not suicide, it's not like suicide, it's not like what he did last time, or although what you did last time they weren't happy about, but now they want you to, you know. So I mean, it's really up to, you can probably hear a thread going through it, but it's not a conscious thread. I don't set out to say, okay, now I'm going to put my trademark on it or my, but I guess it's there somewhere.
Okay.
And if not, not. You know, I mean, it's a matter of certain people who create or live that way. They look to find a new sense, like we were just saying, of awe, of a new place each time. And certain others are not, you know, great artists too, in their own way. They find something that works for them. And they may have found something really profound that works for them and their audience. And they're not looking to break ground every time they go into a studio or go out onto the stage. And many times they're more successful. Not always, but many, especially earlier. It's a different approach to life. They may not be, you know.
Yeah.
You have certain composers that are each way. You have certain jazz musicians who are each way, and certain rock musicians that are each way. You know, one or the other.
Well, I find music much more interesting that isn't made to be successful, but it's made because someone has a need to express himself in a certain way.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of music that touches me.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what, you know, what made the great painters, great painting movements, and it wasn't, I mean, Van Gogh didn't sell one painting in his life. Imagine, that's one painting.
Yeah, if he'd have known.
Right. So obviously, I mean, he would have loved to have been accepted, everyone does.
Yeah.
But he wasn't painting to sell paintings.
No.
I mean, he would, you know, every artist wants to, it's like life, you want to be appreciated. You want to be loved, you know, it's a natural human instinct, but.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, it was his vision of what, finding a place for himself in this world. You know,
yeah.
World of color, world of life.
Do you also paint? Did you make your covers? The artwork for your covers.
Merev was my wife, actually.
Ah.
Mari.
Okay.
The first album, Suicide album, was dedicated to Mari. You'll still see that on the bottom.
Yeah.
And a lot of mine. She did some of the later Suicide covers when they reissued on Roar, the CDs.
Yeah.
So some people confuse, you know, because it's Merev.
Yeah,
so
that's
this is
what
that
I thought.
Her artist name. But no, that's all her stuff. I commissioned her. Said, come on, I want to use your work for these covers. Because it wasn't anything she would ever say, I got to do, you know. She was a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant artist. Mind woman. I mean, she was just incredible. And so I extracted, you know, I mean, stuff. But, you know, I have done certain things visually. Some of those black and white calligraphy things, I don't know if you've seen, but they threw one in a book that was about us sometime, but there's a...
Okay.
But I always knew I was a musician.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I was. And art, I loved, especially after I met Merev. I did a couple of paintings, self-portrait stuff, you know, I really dug it. It was a way to fill in the time, which was most of the time, in between any kind of performance of music. And when I was finishing whatever I was doing, practicing or whatever you want to call it in music, and not having a job or anything like that, there was always more time, and so I was to paint too.
So you always lived off your music?
Well, yeah, but not well for many, many years. I wouldn't say I made a real full living out of music. It took quite a few years. I just got by. I was fortunate at those times that the cost of living wasn't as high as it became. And we were able to scratch by. Not always that easy, but again, youth and, you know, exuberance and love.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
keeps you fed.
But basically, if I had little jobs here and there when I was quite young, part time. You know, they never really worked out for any length of time because they required you being committed to them at some point.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much music all the way through. Of course, I mean, there's a living too, or a non-living.
Yeah, I know the feeling. I'm self-employed. I'm a graphic designer.
Yeah, you know.
And exactly. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's a privilege to make a living off something you enjoy doing.
It's the grand privilege.
Yeah,
it's the ideal.
Yeah, so many people. I mean, I don't have a grand life or everything, but I do something I enjoy doing, and I spend so much time doing that.
Yeah,
that's worth
it. No, that's the ultimate.
Yeah.
You know, it's you pay a price for just not knowing when the next paycheck comes in, but it's the freest, best, you know, to go to a job. Like most people, you know, they're not happy with their jobs.
No.
And or they're obsessed with just becoming more and more successful, and sometimes that eats them up too. But
yeah.
So they could be very successful economically, but to do what you love to do is a great gift.
I know.
And it's not that many. You know,
yeah. I mean, life is short. We have, and we spend so much time working. And a lot of people, they just work, and then they need a lot of spare time to compensate for
right.
the time they don't enjoy while they have to
right,
work.
Right. So they buy things.
Yeah. Clutter up their lives.
Well, they do things that really are self-destructive.
Yeah.
Because it's just, you know.
Yeah. Well, to come back to your music, your last album is just classical music.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about? Where did that come from?
I hear the Northern English accent, which I heard right away. I was going to ask you. You know, it came out of me. I felt that was the next place I wanted to go. I mean, I didn't just discover classical music at that time. I'm always discovering that. I'm always rediscovering other things. I mean, as time goes on, I'm a student, basically, you know. I'm a student of life and I'm a student of music. And that'll never change. You might see the level, maybe I'm on a different grade now. It's a certain high school, but it's in no ways the highest. So every album, every period in your life, in my life, kind of is an adventure which kind of expresses, almost fills or even exhausts that period in expression. And when I start like a new canvas, sometimes I have an idea, but in the right away I know it's fresh. I don't know, you know, I gotta look for something else that's fresh for me. Because the idea from the blast, I thought, wow, I could do another record like this. That's just a spark plug in a way. But then right away I'm in that big open ocean of nothingness, which is a blank canvas. And I'm playing with things and I'm throwing color on the canvas, which you have to at least have something, like painters do a lot of times, just get started. If you know, just throw stuff on the canvas, get a lot of stuff on there, so at least then you can see in it and start taking stuff out. It's one way of working. And at that point, and in some ways now too, I felt there were certain things in, to use an expression, classical music. I mean, of course, it's an overall expression. It doesn't...
Sure.
Or a certain period of classical music being translated through the digital framework, which it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a record I did totally on computer, so it was something... It was fresh. I mean,
it sure was.
I mean, I...
Very surprising.
I couldn't... go any further with, at that point, with rock or loop music or stuff like that. I mean, the album before kind of led up to it, but it was, it sounded different, but that's as far as I could go with certain
sure.
things. And then this was like a new territory for me that I felt I could express things that I'd been hearing for many years in classical music that I liked, but I never wanted to do because it was not new. I mean, okay. to write classical music, pretty much, there's a lot of classical composers, not necessarily going to be that fresh.
Yeah.
Because the form itself has been so developed, like we say, used up. So I would only be able to do that if I found an area in it, which then I could, be using those materials, but I'm going, wow, that's new for me. I mean, I know it relates to something that's already there. In a way, but so does rock and roll, and so does, at this point, almost everything is has been so well developed.
Yeah.
So to make a rock and roll record, it's not going to work for me either unless it's fresh, And I made a few of them. When I made that record To Live, it was fresh enough. But, so that's just kind of how, and I found, the music, and it gave me an approach to vocals, which I always felt I liked, which I got ideas from a certain period of time of vocal music in classic, so-called classical, or bel canto or baroque.
Yeah.
And in that context, I felt, wow, I can do that, what I always dug, because now it's working, it's fresh.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm not making baroque music, I'm not making bel canto, I'm not an interpreter. In general, I'm not an interpretive artist. So I have to do things that feel creative.
Sure. Just express your impulse.
Yeah.
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 So do you actually listen to a lot of current music or classical music or?
I listen to a lot of stuff. Not a lot of it, I confess, is in the background because the amount of time I have in the day is, it's a challenge, a great challenge, a challenge of joy, but to get the work in that I want to do every day. Like, I'm sure as an artist, a certain amount of work playing and a certain amount of work recording, developing, and thinking. And then, besides everything else, eating, cooking, this and that, loving, if you're lucky enough, and whatnot, in whatever way you do. It's, so I don't spend a lot of time saying, I'm just going to listen to music, like I'm just going to watch a DVD. I mean, I have stacks of DVDs that I really want to see, music DVDs and stuff, and there's still stacks of them. But I go back to things. I go back to CDs. When I hear something, I keep the radio on most of the time when I'm not working, when I'm eating, when I'm doing business, emailing, or receiving.
Yeah.
So the radio is always on, and I'm hearing things all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm going, I'm scanning stations. And I hear, I'll hear something a lot of times that I know that I've heard before, but it's just right at that moment for where I am. I go, wow.
Sure. So is there anything in particular you're listening to at the moment?
There's nothing in particular. I'll go back. I'll hear a jazz record or an artist that I knew about when I was a kid. And it'll sound maybe so fresh at that moment. I'll say, so I'll go into my jazz collection. I'll say, a lot of times I have the records right there. And I'll hear something in classical music that, I've probably heard before, maybe many times before. But now I hear it in a new angle. It's something, there's an angle in it or something.
Sure.
Sometimes it's the exact record or the interpreters that the station is playing. So sometimes I'll buy that particular version. Or I'll go into my collection of records and I'll say, let me hear that again. It's a lot of rock also. I don't listen to stuff that similar to what I do in a sense that it's from my time.
Sure.
Because maybe I know it. You know, I don't spend a lot of time listening to trance artists and electro artists and whatnot. I guess maybe it's just I tend to go for things that confuse me more, that, you know, more of a challenge that I don't know as well.
Yeah.
You know, so I can say, wow, how did they do that? I've always been like that.
Sure, I like to discover things as
The
stuff I hear every day, you just get a bit jaded. I like to be excited by my music.
Well, actually, I discovered some time ago, later in my development, that to really grow as an artist, whatnot, or in your craft, whatever, it's to work on what is hard for you.
Yeah.
You know, to work on what you already know and it's easy, which we all have a tendency to do. Just keep playing. But you don't develop the same way. The individuals that keep going really, they don't stop and say, oh, that's too hard, I don't want to spend much time with that. They really try to get it. Some things come in a week, some things come in 5 years.
Yeah.
Depends on what you're going for. And if you continually don't let the hard stuff stop you from mastering it,
yeah,
you know, then you really keep going over hurdles.
Well,
So I don't, you know, if something's that easy, I kind of, if it's not really that new in terms of information, I kind of go on.
I usually find limitations very inspiring. If there are quite strict limits, that challenges me more.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. What I was wondering, when you work, do you still use vintage equipment, or have you updated and you use computers and just try and use the sounds that you've been working with?
I use, like what I do on stage now, I mean, it's not vintage equipment, but the sound is probably not that different or in intensity than what I always did. And I use computers, I use extensively, but I use keyboards. Depends what I'm working on. I mean, for recording, I use a lot of programs. I use computers a lot.
Okay.
And for playing, I still use keyboards. But I don't have any need to go in, you know, to use vintage for its own sake.
Okay.
You know, I'm just glad to get a sound that I, you know, a keyboard that I like, that has good action. To work from there. But I guess I end up, like Alan used to always say, Rev always, he can take any keyboard, he always comes out playing this, he comes back to his sound. It's like,
okay.
You know, so I guess, you know, there's something, we're all like that, you know, we do it.
But you have a pretty unique way of playing your keyboard on stage.
Uh-huh. Any positional wise or?
Yeah, something? Well, no, just it's. Yeah, it became winter again last night.
Yeah, yeah.
We've had a week of summer and now it's winter again. So, do you regularly visit Switzerland actually?
I'm here fairly often. Last night I was in Lausanne.
Okay.
Played there. But I've been in Switzerland, in the last 5-6 years. I've been here several times. Zurich a couple of times. Bern just a few years ago. Geneva.
Okay.
And, mostly Lausanne.
Yeah.
Lausanne a couple of times already, definitely. A few times. Yeah. So I guess I have.
Can I ask you one last question?
Sure.
Is there anything new in the works that you're doing, or is there a new material coming up?
I'm working, nothing at the moment for Suicide, but we continue to work individually, and I'm about at the demo stage. I'm approaching a demo of material I've been working on for some time. So I guess it'll be, you know, it'll be in an album form.
Okay.
Pretty soon, and then I'll send out some copies. You know, see if. But I'm pretty much nightly, daily work. You know, recording stuff, or thinking, or writing stuff. So, and this last collection has been. Some happen. Some come together very quickly, and some, as we say, some take 2 weeks, and some take 2 years, 4 years. I mean, it depends on the nature of the work and what you're going for, and what it demands out of you.
Yeah.
Trial and error, you know, saying this works, this doesn't, do this again, to try this again differently. So, yeah. You know, and when that's so-called completed, you know, I'll be going right into something else. I mean,
sure.
We do it to live, like I'm sure you do your art to live. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not really always to finish something. We just put it in a form. That's part of the art, too, to put it in a form that communicates, that finishes it. Maybe it's part of our living, too, you know. But,
Well, I guess that's the visible part of it that other people can appreciate.
Right. But it smells good. But you realize at some point the idea is not to finish ever anything ultimately, because we never want to. Once we finished, you know, it's like finishing music, finishing art. What would we do?
I mean, yeah.
That would be the worst nightmare, to finish and not be. You know, so it's the process of doing it. That's where all the joy and excitement is, of discovery. You know, it's like in the process.
Yeah.
And when we get things into a place where they've processed through and we're satisfied, you know, they work for us, then we can say, this is, you know, we can leave this where it is. So it's a finish.
Yeah.
And that just dictates a new beginning of something else.
Yeah, I think it's the Aborigines that say that the actual joy of something is making it.
Sure.
And then the finished object just reminds you of the joy you had making it.
It's very, very profound. Right.
Yeah.
That's
so
right.
It's actually the process.
It's the process.
Not the result that is the interesting thing.
Yeah. Oh, so it gives us... I love starting new work.
Yeah.
Because it's always like, wow, you know, it's like, I could do this, I could do this. What a great idea. I could try this. Wow, imagine I could do a whole album like this. You know, it's so open-ended. And then when it starts to, you start to focus in and realize what works and what doesn't. It's a necessary process, but you start going into the details of what you've done and changing. And the canvas becomes more smaller in the sense that you're going into smaller details.
Yeah.
There's more that you realize. I mean, some artists could just keep it, do it, stop it there, or just keep throwing paint on. But if you're going to bring it to a place that, like we say, to kind of like form it and send it out somewhere, like cast it to the waters, you start to realize, no, man, that is not working. You know, the initial ecstasy of like, wow, you know, but it's not going to quite work like that. I got to change this. And then you're changing more and more inside and small. And it's a great process, too. But sometimes it's... It takes a certain concentration, and you realize sometimes you're listening to it so much, you're hearing those details, but you're not as excited about it in the same way, because you're hearing it so much. In the beginning, it's so new, you haven't heard it yet. You know, so there's different stages, but it's all part of that process. It's part of what the Aborigines say, the joy of it all. Definitely.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's been lovely meeting you.
Same here.
Du hast einen Podcast von Rabe gehört, im Sender von Bern. Mehr gibt's auf rabe.ch.